The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but how can anybody take the Genesis account seriously? Six-day creation, Noah and the Ark. Well, my friend, if you've been thinking about Noah and the Ark lately, you have a lot in common with the rest of America, the world for that matter. The brand spanking new movie, Noah, had a sensational opening at the box office. Not as good the second weekend, but it is a lightning rod. There are very few in-between feelings about this movie. People love it or hate it, and the divisions are not along theological lines, interestingly enough. Atheists are divided in how they feel. Christians are divided about how they feel. We'll be talking about Noah today and another religious movie, God's Not Dead. We'll be joined by film critic Mark Boudian, but not until the second half of our program. Before he comes on, as you know, I am a bit opinionated about movies myself. Have you noticed? Obviously, movies with biblical themes interest me as a Christian apologist, but only one of my degrees is in Bible. My other degree is in theater. My other interest is theater. And so you'll be hearing today from at least one Christian minister, namely myself, who is actually okay with what they call artistic license, perhaps a bit more than some pastors you've talked to. Still, having said that, I must also say in this particular case, even though I like Russell Crowe as an actor, even though I like Darren Aronofsky as a director, and even though I like water, honestly, I like water a lot. I drink it when I'm thirsty. The beach is my favorite place. Body surfing is my favorite outdoor activity. Despite all those likes, the movie Noah sucks raw eggs with two straws. Now, before I go on, as I said, many Christians did like this movie. My friend Mark Boudian is one of them. So we'll have an interesting discussion today on The Bob Siegel Show. It will begin this week. It will continue next week because there's much to talk about. Now, let me defend my friend Mark for a moment. Mark will not be coming on and pretending the movie was true to the Bible. He knows it wasn't. In fact, he told me that he wasn't even expecting it to be before he went to the theater. He did think it was true to some of the themes of the Bible. With that, I disagree. However, whether we're talking about Mark or any other Christian, anybody who wants to say, okay, they changed a lot of stuff from the Bible, but I still liked it just as fiction, that's fine. But I'm also hearing Christians say that the movie is faithful to the biblical account, and the producers advertised it as being faithful to the biblical account. The director says it is in his interviews. My friends, that is simply not true. Now, we can disagree as to whether we like the biblical account. We can disagree as to whether we believe or accept the biblical account. But what we can't do is pretend the biblical account is saying something it doesn't actually say. Not only does Noah the movie contradict the Bible, it smacks head on into certain values of the Bible, particularly in its portrayal of God himself. You can like whatever you want. But when Christians claim that this is a movie faithful to the book of Genesis, well, let's see, how can I put this? I'm sure they're still nice people. I'm sure they mean well. I'm sure they truly love the Lord, but they don't know the Bible from Shinola. In fact, as the old saying about Shinola goes, There's something else that they don't know from Shinola, but you see, I'm not allowed to use that word on the radio. Anyway, let me tell you what we're going to do today. First, I'll critique the movie itself, and then I have something for you skeptics out there, because I know what you want to say. I know what you're saying is, if I was next to you and I could hear you, Bob, who cares if the movie is faithful to the Bible? Everybody knows the Bible is a pack of fairy tales anyway. The fiction began, Bob, when the Bible was written. Yes, I hear you, you fun, lovable skeptics, and I will not leave you out. I will defend the biblical account of Noah with actual facts. So today we have Bob, the film critic, followed by Bob, the apologist. We'll even have some fun today and listen to Bill Cosby's famous rendition of Noah. So stick around. Should be an interesting show. Let's start with my review. Director Darren Aronofsky's ambitious film version of Noah and the Deluge has something for everybody. Unless those particular bodies happen to believe in the original flood story as told in Scripture. Although Aronofsky claims he studied every word in the Old Testament's account of Noah, the results of such study seem to be as washed over as Noah's water world. Now, to be fair, I always want to be fair, some of what we read in the Bible did actually make it into the movie. The film does show a flood, and Russell Crowe's character is still named Noah. There's a little more, but not much. Since the real Noah is talked about in both the Bible and the Quran, which gives homage to the heroes of the Bible, three major faiths, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, respect the person of Noah and accept his aquatic survival as factual history. For this reason, many amongst the diversely religious were hoping to see a somewhat inclusive movie. Oh, it's inclusive, all right, but not for anyone expecting the Bible's narrative to be treated with any semblance to accuracy. The biblical account of Noah is found in Genesis chapters 6 through 9. That's before Christ, for you history buffs. Still, it seems less like B.C. and more like P.C. Politically correct views abound, from environmentalism to animal rights to feminist superiority over men to moral equivalency to the very perception of religion itself, namely that extreme religion is harmful. Atheists who like to describe the God of the Old Testament as unloving, vengeful, and bloody will be happy to see Russell Crowe portraying a Noah who views God exactly that same way. Crowe's Noah somehow gets the idea that God wants to wipe out humanity altogether as opposed to removing evil people and then jump-starting the population. This means that even though Noah's family will survive the flood, they are not to repopulate the earth. Thus, when Noah's daughter-in-law, Elah, gives birth to twin girls, Noah sets out to kill them. Yes, you heard me correctly, and sorry about the spoiler alerts, but I guess there was no spoiler alert, just spoiler, but I got to do this. His wife, Naamah, of course, the wife, the woman, is wise enough to realize that Noah must have heard God wrong and should not commit this horrific act. Because of Naamah's rebuke, some of today's more radical feminists might enjoy sitting in the theater while they watch a psychotic, violent male challenged by a wiser, gentle female. But while Noah may be loathed by feminists, he will not look quite so bad to environmentalists and animal rights activists. He is portrayed as a man who cares about the earth and the animals far more than he cares about people. Aronofsky is not shy about this message and seems to think it matches the biblical narrative quite nicely. I'm quoting him. It's in Genesis. Noah is saving the animals. He's not out there saving innocent babies. He's saving the animals. He's saving creation. It was very clear to us that there was an environmental message. To pull that message out of it, we think, would have been more of an editing job than just sort of representing what's there. That was the director, Aronofsky. Now, of course, no environmentalist message would be complete without an obligatory concern for, I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. That's right, global warming. Oh, I'll take global warming for 10, Johnny. While comparing his movie to a United Nations climate change report, Aronofsky said, and I quote, "The water is rising, and we already saw it once. We are living the second chance that was given to Noah." Now, exactly how our carbon emissions created the flood way back in those days, Aronofsky does not say. Did the flood of Noah's day happen because early man was guilty of warming the earth by not being green enough, or because God was judging man's wickedness in general? Aronofsky's film is somewhat vague, and both reasons seem to be offered side by side without explanation. Neither does he explain how the world will be repopulated. You gotta love this one. Although the Bible tells us that all three of Noah's sons had wives as they climbed aboard the ark, only one son in the movie, Shem, has a wife. That's Aronofsky's version. Only one son has a wife. Even after Noah decides to spare Shem and Elah's baby girls, it's somewhat difficult to understand how two females will repopulate the earth. Inasmuch as it is made fairly clear that these will be Elah's only babies, courtesy, incidentally, of Noah's older relative, Methuselah, played by Anthony Hopkins, who worked a miracle on the barren woman before the flood swept him away, the only other reproductive options for the two new girls would seem to be A, incest from Father Shem, B, incest from Grandfather Noah, or C, incest from two remaining single uncles. But however they plan to do it, Noah is content to view these women as the means by which God will replenish the earth. His wife Naamah agrees. It reminds everybody that Elah's baby girls represent the fact that God always provides. Perhaps they were planning to borrow an idea from Jurassic Park and use frog DNA to change one of the sexes. Undoubtedly, Noah brought along a pair of frogs on the ark. If the frogs helped repopulate the earth, we can forgive them for not eating those two flies. Such a story twist would not be much less fantastic than Aronofsky's other artistic licenses. One of the most notable is Noah's bitter enemy, Tubal-Cain, a descendant of the original Cain who slew his brother Abel. And yet, Tubal-Cain is often portrayed sympathetically. We hear him longing to be closer to God with his question, "Why won't you speak with me?" It gets better. Tubal-Cain actually sneaks aboard the ark while the rain is coming down. You'd think that a creative director like Aronofsky would refrain from such a tired plot device. I mean, didn't we already suffer through a weekly stowaway on every episode of The Love Boat? No matter. Aronofsky has his reasons. You see, Noah's son, Ham, is let in on the little stowaway secret. Indeed, Tubal-Cain tries to get Ham to turn against his father. Ham, already angry at Dad for not allowing him to have a wife of his own, listens to Tubal-Cain quote from Genesis chapter 1, where God gives man dominion over the entire earth, including animals and vegetation. On one level, the audience is expected to feel sorry for a man who is merely trying to honor what God originally commanded. Still, those who are determined to find fault in the movie's antagonists are told quite clearly where to look. Tubal-Cain's downfall is in his failure to respect the environment, silly. After all, Noah respects the environment. That's two for one. We get moral equivalency and moral superiority of an environmentalist both at the same time. We'll be right back.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ 1170. I've been reviewing the movie Noah, and I talked about how it's really very politically correct, something for everybody, unless you're somebody who believes in the Bible. And I mentioned that one of the things, of course, it's very politically correct these days to talk about moral equivalency. So the protagonist is Noah, but the antagonist, Tubal Cain, were made to feel sorry for him. And yet at the same time, there were things about him. He's definitely the antagonist. And if we wanted to find something wrong with him, it was that he did not care for the environment. So as I said before we went to the break, we get moral equivalency and moral superiority of an environmentalist both at the same time. It's a twofer. Two for one. And of course, the clincher, this guy had stowed away on the ark. Now, of course, the Bible clearly states that Noah and his family were the only humans who climbed on board the ark. But this stowaway scene comes late in the movie. And by then, all hope of biblical reconciliation has long since been abandoned. Okay, look, nobody says that Hollywood directors should be expected to believe in the Bible. They can believe or disbelieve anything they want. Neither is there anything wrong with artistic license or historical fiction, so long as the borders between fact and fiction are clearly marked. But when writers or directors reinterpret the Bible by suggesting that its true meaning just happens by an amazing coincidence to resonate with their own personal beliefs about the social environmental condition of our world today, that is another matter altogether. Aronofsky's co-director, Ari Handel, says, and I quote, "It was very important to not do anything which contradicted the letter of the text." I had to read that several times to believe it. The statement rings hollow. Handel and Aronofsky would have done better to alter the premise and say, "Hey, folks, here is a reimagining. Supposing there was another planet in our galaxy, which also had a flood and a man similar to Noah in some ways, but different in other ways." Had they done that, it still would have been a lame story, but lame stories are a director's prerogative, and that kind of science fiction alternative would have at least been an honest story. Now, there was another faith-based movie which came out recently, an independent film entitled God's Not Dead. I'll be honest with you, very honest. Many of the films produced by Christians and specifically marketed to the church and publicized by the church are cheesy, poorly acted, poorly written, and even though I appreciate the message that they have, I have to be honest when I critique them, at least from an artistic point of view. However, I am very happy to say God's Not Dead was a delightful exception. It was well written, well acted, well directed. Now, that's not to say it didn't have flaws. It did, but I'm going to discuss that movie in greater detail on next week's show. For now, let me just say, I recommend God's Not Dead as strongly as I don't recommend Noah. And again, I'm saying that as one who often likes secular movies better than Christian movies. Not this time. Anyway, back to Noah. Some have defended Aronofsky's added material by reminding us that he also used ancient texts such as the Book of Enoch and the Book of Jubilees, ancient texts which are not in the Bible, but they talk about these beings called the Watchers. Well, even here, the director gets it wrong. According to these books, the Watchers were rebellious angels who took human form and had sex with human females. Their children were half-angel, half-human beings called giants or Nephilim. In confusing sequences, the Noah film seems to portray Nephilim and Watchers as the same entities. They're also shaped like stone and made of stone in the movie. Maybe this guy liked the old original Star Trek episode where Captain Kirk encountered an intelligent rock civilization. If so, he is reminding us of one of the stupider episodes of Star Trek, but who knows what he was trying to do? I don't know. I do know that according to Jubilees and Enoch, Nephilim were wicked beings in human form who got wiped out in the flood. Their disembodied spirits became demons. As you can see, this discussion gets us onto a whole different topic by opening up its own can of worms. So we'll save that discussion for later. I believe Mark Boobian wanted to get into that a little bit. So maybe a little later today or perhaps next week. And now, for the next few minutes, putting the movie aside, let's ask the more important question. Is the biblical account of the flood some kind of fantastic fable that nobody can take seriously? Sometimes that question is better answered if we check our assumptions going in. I have often been amazed at how many college students will approach me in the midst of a Bible discussion and say, hey, the Bible isn't the only ancient book that talks about a flood. Look at the Epic of Gilgamesh. Yeah, Gilgamesh is one of the more commonly known stories, very ancient, but they don't even have to stop with Gilgamesh. Other ancient traditions exist, such as King Ashurbanipal writing in the 7th century BC. Here are some of his recorded words. I have read intricate tablets inscribed with obscure Sumerian or Akkadian inscriptions on stone before the flood. And there's a Greek story of Kronos and the flood. There's a Chinese flood story. There are European flood stories. There are Australian flood stories, Oceanic Islander flood stories, African flood stories, North American flood stories, South American flood stories, stories from every continent. I know some of you go, oh, Bob. There's always floods here and there. No, they were talking about a great flood. What most of these stories had in common was a flood that wiped out the whole world by some kind of god or gods or some kind of deity, and somebody in their family escaped. If it wasn't a boat, it was some device they could float around on. They were very, very common. Now, people think that all they have to do is point to some epic that's different from the Bible that says something similar, and they think they've somehow disproven the Bible. Ladies and gentlemen, as the old saying goes, to an optimist, the glass of water is half empty. To a pessimist, the glass of water is half full. Varying floods accounts are good news. Why? Because it means there was a flood, right? I mean, this isn't rocket science, but Bob, the accounts contradict themselves. Of course they do. If all cultures once emanated from the same culture, and yet these cultures separated, their stories would change, and they would vary as things get passed on, particularly if they get passed on orally. Now, that doesn't automatically make the Bible's version the correct version. Let me say that again. Let me acknowledge that. That doesn't automatically make the Bible's version the correct version. But by that same line of thinking, that doesn't automatically make the Bible's version the incorrect version either. And there are other ways to corroborate the accuracy of the Bible, such as the established historical fact of Christ's resurrection. Now, I have verified that many times on previous radio shows. There's articles on my website. I do it in my book. And if Christ rose from the dead as a historical fact, which he did, which it is, well, God would not raise a false prophet from the dead who's speaking things in his name that aren't true. So what Christ taught if he rose from the dead was true, and what Christ believed if he rose from the dead was true, and Christ both taught and believed in the Genesis account of the flood. I'm reading from Matthew chapter 24. This is Jesus speaking to his disciples. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Christ also gave special authority to his disciples to speak the truth. His disciple Simon Peter, years after Christ returned to heaven, talks about the time of Noah and talks about it as a fact of history. We read about that in 1 Peter. We read about it again in 2 Peter. Now, global flood deniers will say that a worldwide flood was impossible because the mountains are too high to have ever been covered by water. Oh, really? We'll explain that to them out at Montana State University. Their Everest research program found, and I'm quoting them, fossil-bearing marine limestones that form the summit. Now, in English, that means fossils of dead sea creatures on the top of the mountain. I remind you, Mount Everest is the tallest mountain in the world. Now, I'm no geologist. I'm just someone who likes to make the obvious obvious. I guess if the tallest mountain in the world could have been covered with water, all those other mountains could have been covered with water, too. And meanwhile, if we look at those other mountains, they found similar things in the Rockies, the Andes, the Appalachians, in Russian mountains, in European mountains. Now, here's another objection to the flood story. Bob, how silly to think that Noah went out into the woods and found two of every animal. My friends, you're confusing the Bible with Bill Cosby. Now, I love Cosby. I love Cosby. He's my favorite comedian, and his routine about Noah is hilarious. But the Bible doesn't say that Noah rounded up the animals. It says the animals themselves came to the ark. In fact, that was one of the few, and I mean very few, things that the movie got right. Think about it. Don't animals have an instinct about these kinds of things? If the swallow knows to fly south every winter, if the salmon swims upstream to find the place where it was born to then spawn and die, if evidence exists, and it does, that dogs and rats have sometimes sensed when an earthquake was coming, then couldn't the animals have just known to go to the ark? There's absolutely nothing about that which flies in the face of nature. But back to the Bill Cosby version. Just to show you that my intentions are sincere, just to show you that I have no problem whatsoever with artistic license where the Bible is concerned, so long as the artist is admitting that his material is invented, so long as there's a valid reason for it, such as humor for humor's sake, I can strongly endorse this Cosby routine. After all, Cosby never pretended for a second that this was a Bible study. He just wanted you to laugh. And believe me, after seeing that frightening eyesore Noah movie, we could all stand to lighten things up a little. So let's pay homage to this comic genius and let's laugh once again.
There's a fellow by the name of Noah, built an ark. Everybody knows he built an ark. He said, what did Noah do? He said, well, he built an ark. But very few people know about the conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He's making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter. Vuba, 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 vuba. Noah. Somebody call? Vuba, vuba, vuba. Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Get some wood, build it 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits. Right. What's a cubit? Let's see, a cubit. I used to know what a cubit was. Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Right. Who is this really? What's going on? How come you want me to do all these weird things? I'm going to destroy the world. Right. Am I on candid camera? How you gonna do it? Gonna make it rain 4,000 days and drown them right out. Right. Listen to this, you'll save water. Let it rain for 40 days and 40 nights and wait for the sewers to back up. Right. I was just wondering, what would be the effect of an ark on the average neighbor? Now, here's a guy going to work 7 o'clock in the morning, Noah's next door neighbor, and he sees the ark. Hey, what? What is this? It's an ark. You want to get it out of my driveway? I got to get to work. Listen, what's this thing for anyway? I can't tell you. Ha 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 ha. Well, I mean, can't you give me a little hint? You want a hint? Yes, please. How long can you tread water? Of course, Noah had a heck of a job, really. He had to go out and collect all of the animals in the world by twos, two mosquitoes, male or female. He had to keep telling the rabbits, only two, only two, only two. So we find Noah pulling up the last two animals, two hippos, and he's really in a hurry to get them up because he's afraid that the Lord's going to call him and ask him to do something else, and his nerves are shot. This is one heck of a job for a man 600 years old. So we find him pulling up the last two hippos, and of course the Lord does call him there. Come on, fat hippos, hurry up. Come on, will you please?
Noah.
What? What do you want?
You gotta take one of those hippos out and bring in another one.
What for?
Because you got two males down there and you need to bring in a female.
I'm not bringing nothing in. You change one of them.
Come on, you know I don't work like that.
Sick and tired. I've had enough of this stuff. I've been working all day, working on for days and days. I'm sick and tired of this.
Noah?
Yeah?
How long can you tread water?
Yeah, well, I got news for you. I'm sick and tired of this whole mess. The whole neighborhood's out there laughing at me. You're all having a grand time. Hey, good old Noah there. I went out and got my best friend, Larry. I said, Larry, listen, I've been talking with the Lord. Larry said, oh, really? I said, yeah, yeah. Lord, Larry, Larry Lord. You walked off there laughing. I hear them all up there laughing at me. You know I'm the only guy in this neighborhood with an ark? People around there laughing, picket signs, walking up and down. I'm sick and tired of this stuff here. People are walking around there, how you doing, Tarzan? How's everything up there? Sick and tired of this mess here. You're supposed to know all and see all. You let me go out there and bring in a pregnant elephant. You give me no manual for delivery and nothing. Never told me the thing was pregnant. There's good old Noah waiting underneath the elephant there. Broom, right on top of it. All that stuff for you running around and you're supposed to know all and see all. Like I said before, you let me go out there and do all this stuff for you. You never even looked in the bottom of that ark. Have you looked down there? No. Who's going to clean up that mess down there? That's me. I'll tell you that. I've had enough of this stuff. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm letting all these animals out and then I'm going to burn down this ark and I'm going to Florida somewhere because you haven't done nothing. I'm sick and tired of all this mess. You're fooling around and you haven't done nothing since you got it raining. It's not a shower, is it? Okay, Lord, me and you, right? Because I knew all the time everything.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. We've been talking about the movie Noah. I'm going to introduce my friend, film critic Mark Boobian, in just a moment here. But first, I do have a comment from Facebook regarding my review of Noah. Scott on Facebook says, "So you're saying I shouldn't waste my $12? Oh, no, Scott. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you should skip this movie even if the studio pays you $12 to watch it. And with that, my good friend Mark Boobian. Mark, how are you? Hello, Mark.
For now.
I hear you now.
Okay, great. Well,
what happened? I thought you got drowned in the flood yourself there.
Didn't feel like it. It's one of those things. Technology, you know, who gets it? I sure don't. Well, thanks for having me on, Bob.
I should tell the audience, next week you will be in the studio for the whole show, so we're only starting a conversation that we are going to conclude next week.
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm looking forward to that, too. I didn't want to go completely into my review today. I just wanted to maybe start off by giving sort of my general impression of the film, and then next week we'll have a good time to really talk about the details, because I think there is a lot to talk about, not just because it's a Bible story, but because it's a movie that has a lot of things to say, and there's a lot of responses to it and everything, so it's a really good movie to discuss, and so I don't want to sell it short by just giving it a little bit of time. So, what did I think? I'm a little different than you, Bob. Imagine that.
Now, there are many times when Mark and I agree, many times we disagree. I would say we've probably agreed more than we've disagreed, wouldn't you, on movies in general?
I'm sure. And the thing that's nice about it, though, Bob, is we always can have a fun time talking about it, whether we agree or not. Probably we have more fun talking about it when we don't agree.
One thing that really puzzles me, though, is the last time you were on, you were talking about, was it 12 Years a Slave? Was that the amount of years in the title? Yeah. And what you hated about that movie was the way they misrepresented Christians and Christianity. Now, I know you like this director, and I did say at the top of the show, I like this director, too. I saw The Black Swan. I thought that was a good movie. Maybe I'm not as loyal to directors as you are, but I'm wondering how you could hate one movie for misrepresenting Christianity, but evidently you don't feel that the Bible is as misrepresented this time. I know you didn't agree that it was following the Bible too closely, but you don't think it's quite as misrepresented as I did.
No, I don't think that it's so blatantly represented, and I don't think that the director was targeting... For 12 Years a Slave, for example, my impression was is that the director kind of had a hang-up about Christianity in a way, and it was coming out through his art. That's the way I understand.
Well, I'm not necessarily suggesting that this director, Aronofsky, was targeting anything. I don't know what his motives are. I can only look at the results. When he says that they were true to the text, that's just not true. And I know that because I've read the text. And I've seen the movie.
The little teeny bit of text there is.
Yes, and I know they said there's a little teeny bit, so we filled it in. I'm fine with being filled in. There were 4 hours of filling in Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments, but they contradict the amount of text that is there. It goes beyond just filling in.
Right, and that would be more your realm because you're an apologist, and I know you know the Bible much better than I do. So,
but as an artist, as one who loves drama, I have feelings about the limitations of artistic license too. I'm a big believer in artistic license. So I would say as an artist and as an apologist, I'm having that concern.
Okay.
But so, I do know you wanted to get into that mostly next week.
And right. That's true.
Okay. So next week, folks, my good friend Mark, and it's always an honor to have him on the show, and I always respect him, but boy, am I going to have it out with him next week. I can't wait.
Yeah, apparently so. Okay. I'm going to start taking notes now. okay. So my view of the movie is a little bit, I'm not sure how to quite phrase where I categorize my view.
Yeah, unlike me, you didn't think it sucked raw eggs with two straws.
No, I did not. I probably the opposite. You know, I think it was more like an ice cream sundae because I like ice cream sundaes more than raw eggs.
So I like ice cream sundaes too, but I'll never be able to look at them the same way again now.
You can thank me for that. Your ice cream sundae. For me, thematically, and now that's kind of where I would point to 12 Years a Slave, where it's kind of below the surface, not necessarily what's stated directly in terms of plot and story, but a little more what's implied or what you're seeing or what they're conveying. To me, I thought this was the best version of Noah I've ever seen or heard. Now,
well, I'm not saying there's a better version out there.
No,
I'm just saying if there's ever going to be one, this ain't it.
There, because the version we've seen millions of different Noahs. The problem for me has been, I think that, or the revelation for me, I should say, with this movie is that I didn't realize how every version was basically the same thing retold and retold, and how different the Bible could be in terms of what is going on. So typically, I would say, I grew up with the, you know, cute little ark floating in the bathtub, bobbing up and down, and there's the, you know, the Lego Noah there sitting on top with his staff, and there's some cute little stuffed animals inside, and that's what I always saw Noah in the ark as. And that's basically from the very first Noah that I saw on TV to, I don't know how many I've read, how many little storybooks I've gotten. That's kind of what's been conveyed. And for me, the strength of this film is that it doesn't take a look at that aspect of the story. Certainly that is an aspect of the story, but that's not what they focused on. They said, what does the world look like at this time? How did you get to a place where God would say, it from Genesis, the very intent and thought of man's heart was evil continually. What does that look like? And I thought he did a very good job of showing us what that looked like. It was a little cliche because it has that kind of action movie look to it. But
well, and it's cliche because it's kind of an environmentalist message, whereas the Bible says it was the problem was the people were violent. And yes, he does show the violence too. That's why I said it's kind of like he's got two different reasons side by side in there.
Well, I interpret that very differently because in terms of man's heart being evil, I think that the corruption, the depth of corruption of humanity is conveyed through the environmental destruction. Now, they refer to God as creator only in the film. So what I see is that the corruption of creation is sort of an abomination to the creator in a way. And
did you get the feeling that the creator and the creation were one and the same? He did say the beginning was nothing. And then he started talking about something that sounded a lot like an evolutionary process. And it almost made you wonder if God himself as part of creation came out of the nothingness. Now that one I can't prove, but I would say that one was just an impression that I got watching.
Now, are you talking about the beginning of the film has...
Well, when he tells the story to his family, he says, in the beginning was nothing. The Bible says in the beginning was God.
Right.
So that's a pretty big difference.
Yeah, and see, I didn't actually catch that nuance there. So that's an important thing to...
Well, you know what, Mark? Yeah. I was enjoying a great big box of buttered popcorn while I watched this stuff, so it was not a total waste of time for me after all.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I have no argument for that one. I wasn't prepared. I didn't take notes about that, but...
I didn't take notes either. My hands were too sticky from the butter on the popcorn.
But, you know, along the lines of that evolutionary sequence, now, I didn't like that scene in the movie, but artistically, not necessarily by what he was conveying. Now, I think one of the good things about the movie, or one of the things that you hear said in the movie, the Tubal Cain, who's the bad guy, you know, that is a name actually from Genesis, but it's obviously they're trying to convey that this is the son of Cain, and he's corrupt and everything, and he says something about, I have dominion over the land, and I do whatever I want.
And he's quoting Genesis 1 accurately when he says that.
Yes. Now, one way to interpret this is to say, well, look at this. This guy is saying, hey, you know, this is how bad religious people can be. They're misusing the Bible. But the way I viewed that in the film, I recognized that line right away. But to me, it went back to this idea of corruption, that man has become so corrupt that their purpose, the God-given purpose of humanity, has been destroyed. And he's actually taking what God said and making it mean basically the exact opposite. You're not going to be... God did give us dominion. That's what it says. God also said to take care of the garden or the environment, the land, whatever it was exactly. I don't have the wording, but and there's two different sections where it says that. One is dominion and the other one is take care of, and they must mean one and the same thing because it's a very similar type of passage, a very similar type of covenant type of statement that God's making. So that's why part of the reason I see him using that in the movie, again, is because it's a corruption of the goodness of God, or even the goodness of mankind, that God had us, that God bestowed upon us, is what I'm.
Okay. Well, I'm biting my lips because I want to honor your request to save the argument for The Ring next week. I know you also wanted to talk a little bit about the different ways people perceive movies, and certainly some of that's coming out right now because you and I have a different perception, but you had some thoughts about arts in general that you wanted to emphasize this week, so I do want to give you a chance to do that in the time that we have left.
Okay, so let me go ahead and talk a little bit about that. So the reason I began with talking about the theme of the movie and how we perceive it differently, or how I was raised to perceive the story of Noah, and it not really being a good, not necessarily the best lesson you can learn from Noah. I mean, there is a lesson of God's mercy in that, and I think that's why we tell it to our children, but I think it's also important to see man's sin as well, because we didn't get to the point of being destroyed by just, you know, sitting on our laurels. We were doing something terrible. We became actively evil, and that's an imperative to our relationship with God in terms of where we are in the world now and in terms of Jesus. So the reason I'm emphasizing that is because my perception of Noah was radically challenged when I saw the movie. I was like, oh my gosh, I never thought of this. Now, I also went into the movie knowing who the director was, as I think you mentioned earlier, and knowing that he's not going to do the story of Noah in any sort of standard way. He's very artistic.
Boy, you can say that again.
Yes, right. We agree on that, don't we?
We found something to agree on.
It wasn't a standard Noah story. So, but me going into the movie with that attitude and kind of thinking, okay, I know I'm not going to see the story of Noah. I wasn't thrown for a loop when it wasn't the story of Noah. Now, I did see the trailer, which I never watched before movies. Not that I would have cared about Noah, because obviously I kind of know the story.
Well, not this time you didn't.
Right. Ironically. Now, the funny thing is...
Although, according to that trailer, you'd think it was the biblical version, straight and pure and simple.
Exactly. That's the trailer that Paramount made. And I was like, what?
So that the sucker Christians will promote it from their pulpits.
Exactly. I mean, that's actually the kind of movie, you know, I mean, it was the animals and the nice Noah. Maybe he wasn't great bearded, but it was Russell Crowe looking pretty good.
It was like Joan Embry at the San Diego Zoo on the Johnny Carson show.
Exactly. The hawk swoops in and lands on her arm and everything.
Warm, heartfelt family entertainment.
Right. Now, can you imagine being sold and told, hey, this is the movie you're going to see, and sitting down and watching this version of Noah?
They're going, boy, that Walt Disney's gone downhill.
Yeah. Right. What the heck is going on there? So
this isn't like the Swiss Family Robinson.
Right. And that's basically what they were trying to sell us, something like that, or even almost The Sound of Music from what I was seeing. I mean, it was supposed to be this fun, nice, cute family movie.
Hollywood better never talk about the way Christian evangelists try to soft pedal and sell things again.
There you go. Yeah, the self-avowed atheists are actually into... Yeah, well, actually, no, he's the one that did the bad movie. I don't know what Paramount's marketing was thinking, but certainly not the same thing as the director. So I think that some of the effect of the film is, you know, when you go in, you're expecting a movie to be a certain way, and then it's completely different. And I think that there's sometimes that can be a good thing, but other times it's hard to overcome that expectation.
Well, in its own right, the idea that a film is different and fresh and original is good. You know that normally I love that.
Absolutely.
You know, but when they're claiming one thing and producing something else, that's kind of another story.
Yeah. And that's sort of, I mean, that's what was going on here. And now to the director's credit, I don't think he approved that trailer because he knew what movie he was making.
No, but I've read his interviews, and in his interviews he says similar things. They were faithful to the text, true to the text.
He does say that. Right. Now, what I'm talking about, though, is the trailer didn't even really sell the dark elements of the Noah story that we see in the movie and that are in the Bible, where the heart of man is so corrupt, and you just kind of, there's a little bit of that, just, oh, there's some people running around, and then they go back to the animals getting on the ark.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you, Mark, that just going by the biblical account itself, it is certainly a dark story. I mean, the world's getting wiped out, only one family is surviving. It is a dark story. I don't have any problem with them wanting to play up that aspect of it.
Right. You want it, but it's important for them to be
truthful
to the spirit of
like
the story.
Like if Noah's son had wives, you don't have only one of them have a wife. I mean, just little things like that.
Right.
You don't have somebody stow away the ark. I mean,
right. And I can see that as definitely problematic in terms of the story and the drama and how different that is and how that does not at all come close to anything in the Bible.
I guess
all,
he wanted a twist, and well, it was a twist, all right.
Right, that it sure was. So, I read one atheist. Let's see, I'm calling this person an atheist without actually knowing, so maybe I'm misrepresenting them. But I read a review by somebody. I've never read a review by them before. I don't even remember who it was, but I was taken by that it was a glowing review of the movie and how great this movie is and how it kind of stuck it to the religious body as a whole, and that the person was even had been in Catholic school and asked, how did all the animals get on the ark? And the nuns couldn't answer the question. And it was clear to me that the person that wrote the review had some real
issues
when they went into the movie,
and that is understandable because sometimes people grow up in those places and they do ask good questions, and then they just hear things like, well, you have to accept it by faith, or you're made to feel bad for doubting. So it is understandable why some of these skepticisms develop. I think it is
right, and there are parts of the Bible that don't give direct answer, like in the Noah story, how did the animals not eat each other on the ark? I mean, that's one of the most famous questions. And you know, the movie, whatever, they could or could not have answered that. I wouldn't have cared either way. But
you don't think he had a supply of Soylent Green that he fed them?
He could have, actually, after the flood. Right, there you
that's
go.
Right. They could have had all the Soylent Green they wanted after the flood.
Right. But so you can see, though, that there's a certain perception this person has that they're bringing into the movie. So the movie had an effect on this particular critic because of who they were and where they're at. And I think that's one of the key things about art in general, that it's not just what we're seeing or experiencing, it's what we bring to the table ourselves. And that's how we interact with the art. And I think that that's a really important lesson that I've kind of learned through this movie, because I've seen so much reaction from very different and diverse range of people.
Well, Mark, I will look forward to having you on next week as we discuss this some more. And we can model for everybody out there that just because the two of us are Christians, that doesn't mean we monolithically agree on everything. So I will look forward to what you have to say. And I always say that everybody has a right. I will stand by your right to be wrong about this, Mark.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, no, seriously, Mark, I do have a great respect for your opinion. I'm always honored that you come on my show, and we will see you all next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.